Hello, I'm Lori Watanabe, the editor of Mobility Management Magazine. I'm joined by Barry Dean, the CEO of Lucy, and Jared Dean, Lucy's CTO, to discuss how the complex rehab technology industry can better encourage and nurture innovation for the benefit of wheelchair riders and their families. Barry Dean is the CEO of Lucy and is one of the co-founders along with Jared. Barry is an award-winning songwriter based in Nashville, but he's also dad to Catherine and Alex, both of whom are power wheelchair riders. As Lucy's CEO, Barry sets the strategic vision and leads Lucy toward its goal of providing security, stability, and connectivity for power wheelchairs. Jared Dean is co-founder and chief technology officer at Lucy, where he brings his decades-long experience in new product development to life. As CTO, Jared heads all product development and innovation and oversees a team of more than 15 engineers based in Denver. Jared is also the former director of the award-winning Capstone Design at Mines program at the Colorado School of Mines. And of course, Jared is Catherine and Alex's uncle. So Jared, Barry, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for being with me.
Well, thanks
for having us.
Being here. That's great. I've been fortunate to talk to you since before we announced we existed. As we were talking
about,
you had meetings with us and talked with us right before we announced. And thank you. Thank you for your help in all this.
It's been fun. And what started off our most recent collaboration was, Barry, you were the opening day keynote speaker at the International Seating Symposium, which took place at the end of January into February. And your topic was industry innovation and basically how difficult it is to innovate and go forward with a new idea and to make it succeed. I think prior to that talk, I thought that the hardest part of innovation was coming up with a great idea. But no. From your keynote, I learned that thinking up the great idea might actually be one of the easier parts of the process, because what comes after that can prevent the greatest idea in the world from succeeding. So as I said, I introduced you as the co-founder of Lucy. In that respect, you're relatively new to CRT. As dad to Alex and Catherine, both of whom use power wheelchairs, you've been part of the industry for a long time, actually. And you said in your keynote, there's a lot of ways that good things get thrown to the side. There's a lot of ways that innovation can die. You also talked about the mindset of creating products to meet a code. So I wanted to ask you if you thought that was one of the main challenges to innovation, is that mindset of creating products to a code? And I guess on Jared's side, Jared, how do you escape that mentality? I mean, was that something you had to overcome, or did you start off by thinking like, nope, that's off the table. We're just going to make what Catherine needs, what Alex could use in this situation.
Well, I'll maybe jump in and answer my part first, because it's maybe an easier one. And then I'll let Barry take it from there. But
okay,
we say we build to the need, not to the code. And that was from the very beginning. And it was really easy because we have family members using wheelchairs. And so this never started from a market analysis or from a spreadsheet or from some sort of, a survey. This started from a lived need in our family. And that's been able to keep the goals really clear from the very beginning. And we did it backwards in that way. In all the ways regarding the end product, that's been a positive way. But in then being able to bring that technology to users more broadly in the market, there's a reason that a lot of the companies build to the codes. That's established. That's how companies make profit. And so it's been a paradox of, we believe so strongly in building to the need, not the code. And yet, then we still have to work within the constraints of this industry.
Yeah, that's right. And I do think, I like that you're using the word mindset, because, there are several mindsets that serve as a kind of barrier, roadblock, whatever you want to call it, towards innovation. If a clinician has a passive mindset towards seating and mobility, I'll just let the sales ATP handle that. Well, that's a roadblock to innovation, because they won't be pushing for the client. They won't be advocating for the client. And what they'll receive is, by and large, what's been determined by an executive team to be the most profitable roadmap. And we all understand why that would be the case. The sales ATP is often, I think, put in a very difficult position because they have this heart and want to help. They also have enormous pressures to follow the script. So I think that's a mindset that they're having to work through. And there's so many good ones that are, you know, there's so many great people we know. And so, yeah, there's several. And one of those mindsets is if there isn't a code, we don't do it. I have no doubt there have been conversations in the industry about innovation that people would say, I wish we had this. I wish we could do that. Why can't we do this? And especially inside companies, you know, I mean, one of the things as a newbie has been meeting folks, you know, inside the companies of, you know, the different manufacturers, Permobiles, who springs to mind. I know there are conversations of things that people want to do or have told them to do. I read a little white paper again that I had read a long time ago, if you'll indulge me. They were talking about how they wanted to see change in the industry. And there was this white paper from 2017. Talking about how Apple approached application development and created a platform. They said, I believe we have a similar opportunity across CRT and the adjacent spaces that service the same consumer. For us, it may not be about app development only, but a more connected approach to better outcomes would create a focus on creating products and services to be more compatible and synergistic to benefit the end user. Dropping down, there's an example given of reducing the need for home modifications with mobility equipment designed to create more accessibility and more function. The impact of this would be an overall customer experience in terms of reducing frustration, improving communication, and it could be transformative. And it's several pages of great ideas written by our friend Mike Swinford, in 2017. But how do we go from a white paper that we, you know, it Lucy's the same problem. How do you go from saying, I wish this, I want this, or I see the benefit of this financially, to actually helping people? Now, it's been 5 years since this came out. And time matters. Time matters to little kids if they don't have access to early mobility. Time matters to ALS patients. And time matters to our family and to our, you know, my son has Friedreich's ataxia. My daughter has cerebral palsy. And so time matters. And so we felt like as we came at this with a mindset that said, what is the need? How do we approach this with fresh eyes and a long-term view? Then we will address codes and we will address these things. But we have to solve problems, too. And so I think sometimes that gets lost occasionally. I'm happy to hear, hopefully, that it was encouraging my talk at ISS, because what I didn't want it to come off with was, you know, that I have all the answers or we do as Lucy, or that we're the judge of it. We just know our experience as caregivers and family dealing with that and friends, and also then what it's like to be a small company trying to innovate in this incredibly controlled space. We're not the first little company to try, but most of them don't succeed. And another mindset that's dangerous is, if it wasn't invented here, we're going to be against it. That's a bad idea. The auto industry embraces technologies and works at it that way. And I would love to see more of that, but I'm not in charge of all of it. So.
Well, I love what you said about being in this industry for a very, very long time as family members before you actually said, hey, we see a need. There doesn't seem to be a product out there. Jared, can you build it for us? I know that's not how it happened, but I got to tell you, from my point of view, that's kind of how it sounds like it happened. Hey, Jared, are you busy Saturday? Can you build Catherine something that would be super helpful, keep her safer? And Jared's like, well, of course, I would love to. What do you have in mind? Yeah. And, you know, all these years later, Jared's like, there's HCPCS codes. What are you talking about? The interesting perspective I think that you have is that you are family members first. Yeah. And when you approach this at more as an industry player, that relationship kind of changed, but you had all that observational experience beforehand. Yeah. And you said you were very careful before you launched. You talked to a lot of people before you launched, did a lot of work. Your latest Lucy Plus Air system, which monitors the inflation of air cushions, is an example of something that was completely done before you said anything about it.
That's right.
So, and you said in your keynote, Barry, that this 2022 ISS was the sixth ISS event that you'd attended.
That's right.
But in the past, you kind of hunkered down largely in the back of the ballroom and just like maybe just took notes on your phone or something and didn't really say anything. So that gives you a unique perspective, I think, coming in. I wanted to know what both of you have learned from launching Lucy. What have you learned about how the CRT industry views innovation, especially innovation that comes from outside the CRT industry, which can be a very insulated community, as you know? And on the other side, what support have you received from the community as you've been launching Lucy?
You know, one of the things about the industry is it is resistant to outside change. Part of that is the coding system, but also part of that is, I think, the way the industry is structured. There's a few key players that have a large say in what is made available to people like Catherine and our users. And so it's really easy to filter things out that don't increase efficiency or that don't offer enough profit margins, those sorts of things. But then I also think there's a healthy dose of skepticism from the clinic side. And I don't think this is necessarily a bad thing. Clinicians are, you know, protecting their clients and their patients. And so they're slow to change in many ways. There may be excitement about the technology or about the options, but there's sort of a prove it in the industry. And that may not be a bad thing at that level. But you've got to get through all those layers to get to the end users. And so it's a slow process. And it has been in our experience, that when we can get a clinician or someone in Lucy to actually experience it, it changes the whole conversation. And so I think early on, we underestimated how much that hands-on practical experience in the clinic was critical for clinicians and for everyone to really understand and accept Lucy. Now, at this point, it's exciting. You know, we're in over 40 states, and we've got Lucy units all over the country. And every day, for an average Lucy user, Lucy's preventing like 11 or 12 potential injuries a day from collisions, and one or two tips a day that could have happened without Lucy. So it's pretty exciting to go through and get to the point where Lucy's out there in the wild, nationwide, doing what it does. And obviously, we're learning and getting feedback from all of those clinicians and all the ATPs and sales folks. I don't know if that's is what you were looking for, but I mean, that's kind of how I see that.
Yeah, we were so blessed to get to, and still are, to work with incredible clinicians and have their insight and advice. And you know, we talk about building to the need, and we talk about our family connection. But we also did the other things. We hired an independent company to do a completely blind anonymous survey situation. We've worked, you know, with user groups and clinicians, and, you know, we've done all the things that you would expect a company to do. We're aware of all of that. We're not disregarding the way the payer world works and those kinds of things. But when we came at this, I think the clinicians taught us so much, the users taught us so much, outside of Catherine and our family members and friends. We made new friends, and they showed us their world and how Lucy could be helpful. And I appreciate you saying that about the part of the speech where we talked about, we're not just sort of quickly rolling these things out. We invested the millions of dollars in men and women hours in creating it over the last 4+ years. And so now we are starting to show the beginnings of that roadmap. We'll just in the next few weeks, we'll show some more things that are hopefully exciting and helpful to folks. And I like Dr. Emma Smith. I don't know her personally, but I've heard her speak and read some things she's written and follow along. But one of the interviews I heard, you know, she was talking about, basically, she was saying, I don't know how much innovation I count on. I'm paraphrasing very loosely, so I'm not trying to speak for her. But she was saying, I look for innovation from Google and Apple and Microsoft and these companies. You could tell that was really where she was putting her hope. And I don't blame her, because you have to be willing to change a lot of things to create the kind of thing Lucy is. You have to not be beholden to certain things to go and create this new thing. And that's kind of true of any innovation, right? So that's what I meant when I was saying it. Sometimes it comes from the outside because when you look at it differently, you're not entrenched in certain areas that just most large companies are because they're the big company. And so I think that allowed us to take a fresh look at it. And I also say the other thing that surprised us a little bit was because of the great clinicians we've got, you know, we get to meet and get to work around and have known. We've also seen a lot of passivity in the clinicians that surprised us. We kind of thought everybody was going to be like who we'd met. And then you started realizing, no, there were a lot of people who didn't feel comfortable getting involved. They were letting the sales ATP kind of drive the show. And certainly they need to be a partner alongside. But, you know, now we're getting into this phase of the world where, and we knew, we put Judging Smart out as a way of saying, look, we're going to start talking about these technology things and the technology devices, and people are going to start throwing around the word smart. Don't allow that. Don't be a sucker. Don't allow somebody to take a brick and paint it silver and tell you that's technology, because a brick as a doorstop is technology. But I don't think that's what we really mean, right? A walkie-talkie isn't an iPhone. And so there's a certain element where we're going, look, do the math. If it takes 6 feet to stop a chair, and then a normal fast reaction time is another 3 feet or so, you've got to be looking out far enough to make an impact. Otherwise, it's not very smart at all. In fact, it's just a waste of time and money. And so we're going to get pretty vocal about this because there's a tendency, and I've seen it as a family member, there's a tendency to always sort of solve the person in the wheelchair's problem with the PVC pipe or the cheap version of it or the knockoff. And that's not how we see it. I love the Michelle Lange's quote about the chair wasn't living up to the potential of the person in the chair. And I hear a lot of discussion about the chair metrics and we want data from the chair. And we have all that. But I'm also more interested in the data as a useful tool for the person in the chair and for policy and for best practices for that. So I think that's what I'm really excited to see. I think that we've learned so much. And I think what I really want to say is we've been really grateful at the sales ATPs and the clinicians and the techs who have been incredibly generous with us. And of course, the users and their families. So.
Shout out to Dr. Emma Smith. She signed a book deal, I think, this week or something.
We're fans,
Emma. We're fans.
She's going to be like, why are you stalking? But no, I mean, right. You know, I appreciate the positions that are taken and, you know, have no affiliation whatsoever. I just, one thing that is kind of funny is people are sometimes surprised because we spent so many years working quietly and not sharing too much and doing that. We're big fans of lots of the clinicians, and we've read all these papers, and we've gone to these lectures. And so I think sometimes they're a little surprised when we treat them like rock stars. But to us, it was really, you know, for that. So for our journey.
One of the questions I had about keeping an open mind toward innovation is the fact that you had the wherewithal to make this happen, however you define wherewithal, your resources, your connections, your knowledge, the time, energy, financial investment, you had that. And it really made me think, but what happens to all the other innovations that don't have that kind of backing behind them? Many of them must just disappear because for whatever reason, you know, there's part of that equation missing. So given how hard it is to come from the outside of the industry with these innovations, how can we inside the industry keep open minds? It sounds really easy to say, keep the family at the center, keep Alex and Catherine at the center, keep whoever is the client in your clinic at the center. But we also have the accounting department or the receivables department saying, yeah, you know what you need to keep at the center? The fact that we're not getting paid for this stuff if you don't make a good argument. So how do we keep open minds about innovation and not get just carried away with the allowable question?
Yeah, Jared, I'll go first just for a second. You'll probably have a much better, more concise answer. But one thing that springs to mind is I hear stories sometimes of, hey, this big company tried to come into our industry, but we kind of, it's almost like we ran them off. Well, who does that benefit? Does that benefit the user? Does that benefit the clinician? Does that benefit profitability? Only for a very few. It benefits a couple of people, a couple of companies, but not overall. Has it made service issues go away? No. Has it opened up new doors for technology? No. So maybe we need to be a little more focused on building bridges to these technologies and these companies. We said at South by Southwest at our presentation there that we were presenting because we wanted them to know if they would just build a door or a window, we would build the bridge to them. We want gamers and technologists and motorized vehicle developers all over the world thinking of smart cities technology. We want them thinking of our users, our clients, the people we work for. So I think that's an important component. And another thing I would love to see in the industry, and I think it helps keep things open. If the best we can do, you know, as an industry is, they have a red, I'm just making something up. They have a red horn. So now we'll make our own red horn, and then they'll make a red horn, and we'll all have a red horn competition. Well, we haven't gone very far down the road in helping the people we care about. And they are our consumers. I think what is changing now in this era is that the people living with this mobility experience and this dealing with these products, they're realizing they're a consumer. And as that awareness grows, they will demand the changes. And we want to be able to make sure we're providing those things for them. But I would love to see partnerships, and we've tried to seek those out, that allow us to move the ball down the field. So often I feel like, oh, this person has this innovation, so they'll go copy it and they'll do a version and they'll go copy it. And that's a very limited view of what our mandate is. And at some point, as the consumer awareness rises and as the clinician, as their advocate rises, and we're hearing it from sales ATPs, they want what we're doing and what other folks, other companies are doing. It's just very hard to get small companies things through the system, and it ends up being turfed out. So if you end up with this provider or that provider, you've just now, as a clinic, if you're one of these clinics that has only works with this provider, you've made a decision on what your users have access to. You would never give away their HIPAA data, but they're not aware that they've been limited in their options. And so I think there will be ramifications from the growth of the consumer. I'm a customer. That's why the box has games on it for Lucy. That's why we made it colorful. That's why we wanted to sort of say, we see you and you're important. You're critical to this whole thing, as compared to ignoring that facet of it and running by it. That was a long answer, but that's something I've been thinking about.
Barry surprised me with his quote from the white paper earlier, so I'm going to surprise him with this, and I'm going to basically say that is a problem. And it is a specific problem in the way this industry has decided to organize itself, where if you want to work with one, you can't work with the other, and we're all against each other, and there's all this sort of a tit for tat between all the companies. And we've tried really hard to be Switzerland in that and try to work with everybody who's willing to work with us to move the ball down the field. And we're going to continue to do that with small companies as well. And we have done that quietly. There have been quite a few meetings in the background, and we're going to continue to try and come at this not as sort of the existing companies have always operated, which is siloed and against everybody else, but as a technology company, as a modern company, where you go, we can work together. There are reasons to collaborate. There are reasons to help smaller companies succeed because they move everybody forward. This thought process, while it is a new approach to this industry, is how the entire world works now. And I come from a world of technology and development that was not constrained in the ways that the industry is today. So I think a lot of your excuses or arguments about profitability and codes and those kinds of things have solutions. It just requires a new way of thinking. I think you'll see as more companies come in and start innovating and start working together and sort of bringing modern approaches to business into this space, you're going to see the whole industry start to shift.
Well, and we're just one little company, you know, trying to do what we think is helpful and to try to pursue, you know, the reason you start a company normally is because you have some view of the future that's different than it is now. And you are using your company as a way to pull that future forward, which is what we're doing. At the same time, our attempt to be Switzerland, for lack of a better description, in this deal, it's not easy to do. And it's not been always possible. I mean, most of the companies, again, we've had really great fortune to have some great partners on the company side that have really been excellent partners. But there are some companies that won't do it. They just won't, you know, and we know, you know, one of them kind of wasted our time for about a year. And now we know they're trying to create a knockoff, and that'll get solved by patents and all kinds of stuff. But the issue is, don't just clone what we're doing today. Build a future. Pave road. You know, I've got a good friend, Sean McConnell, a great singer-songwriter. If you like music, Sean McConnell is phenomenal. And they adopted a young lady, Abiella, and she has some special needs. And when they adopted her, we were talking, and he said, "What do I do? What do I do?" She was brand new. And I said, "You know, I just focus on mom and the baby and yourself and do that. And well, what about when I have to do this? And what about when I have to do that and get a van? Or what if we need a wheelchair?" All those things that come to your mind when you're dealing with this. And I said, "I totally understand, but I'm ahead of you on the road. Let me just pave as much road as I can. And you just focus right now on mom and baby. And you walk that road. I'll try to pave as much as I can. And then when I'm done or old, you take over. You'll have it all sorted and you'll know things. And you pave the next bit of road." And that's really what I would love to see in the industry is, again, if we have to do it, Lucy, by ourselves, obviously we can do that. But if we can work with partners to move down the road instead of just keeping lining up in these safe zones where we just make a sort of artificial competition, let's roll that ball down the road. Who deserves it more than our clients? That's the thing that I think is my hope, is everyone will kind of realize, wait, there's this solution and this solution, but we need that. Let's go get that. Let's lead, you know, not just profit.
My final question is, you know, currently the industry largely relies on insurance, and that leads to this whole building for a code, building to the allowable sort of mindset. Should we also be trying to change that narrative, though? Should part of the conversation we have with families and consumers be, you can make the choice here. You do have a choice. Join with us so that we can bring you more options and get the funding issue shifting in perspective as well. Is that something that we should be pursuing, do you think?
I mean, I would give it a resounding yes. This is a yes and. In addition to the manufacturers and the companies needing to look at the world differently, also we need to come together and we need to address the current funding system, which does make it very difficult to bring innovation into the market. But that's a reality. We're willing to fight that fight, but bringing more people together and getting users involved and engaged to help make the system work to their advantage, to meet their needs as people, is a critical part of this whole discussion.
Absolutely. Yeah, the voice of the nothing about us, without us, and that energy is so important, but it's not just for lobbying, though very effective for lobbying, but it's also for just an awareness that I have a choice that I get to make. There was that moment when Nokia showed up and you could get different colored phones. And that was awesome, right? Everybody was like, "Oh, I'll do red, I'll do purple." But we really wanted more than that, didn't we? We wanted something else. And once it showed up, we saw, oh, it can lead to these other things. We're trying in a small way to do that with Lucy, to say, yes, it's safety and collision and drop-off protection, but hold on just a minute. What changes when your wheelchair adds this level of power? What else can happen on a platform approach? Boy, suddenly seating becomes very different and literally can become involved. You know, seating and mobility, it's medically necessary, but what if it actually tells you things and does things, you know? I have a blood pressure cuff that I use every day and goes to this app and sends messages here and there to the doctor or whatever that I need. Well, that's the standard minimum.
If we're going to really call it a smart wheelchair, it needs to deal with independent mobility, it needs to deal with user health and wellness, and it needs to actually connect and integrate with the world. Obviously, those are our focuses with Lucy, but users expect that. Users expect that.
And you know who else expects it, strangely? Healthcare companies and payers, insurance companies. Everywhere else is shifting over to value-based and protocols and what's most effective practices and having that information. And I really feel like they're going to begin demanding these things. And if we don't have that, what will we have to answer with? So then will we have cut off assistance to the people we care about because we didn't do the leadership thing we needed to do and provide those kinds of, you know, again, anonymized, aggregated. I'm not talking about violating anyone's rights here, but I also don't want my daughter, our friends, I don't want them invisible because there is no data. And so healthcare just throws them over here out of the way. That's not what I want. I want our needs up center. I want us to be the source of great research and data. And so that's why we've partnered so much early with University of Colorado Denver and University of Washington and this new thing we're doing in Chicago and, you know, trying to go, no, let's build this. Let's get research, actual data that we can use to show the effectiveness and necessity of these interventions. And we think we can be a part of that. And I think the payer side would respect that because here in Nashville, at least, that's kind of the whole business here in Nashville and healthcare is this data-driven sort of thing. So I think it could be great. And I was just going to jump back. We do feel that we, you know, you were talking about our family and our ability to do that. And that is both absolutely true and also required the sacrifice of our entire families. And that includes Peter Knapp, who joined us when we started. And everyone in the Dean family decided this was ours to do. We did not set out to start a company. That was, in fact, we said we wouldn't. And we had the problem solved for Catherine that we needed 5 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago. And we were advised to not go into this industry. And they gave us a list of companies that had tried to innovate and had been pushed out. So there was a part of us that went, Jared's killing it in his career. I'm rhyming for a living, which is a pretty lame way to make a living, I understand. But then there was this realization that we were given an opportunity that we felt we were supposed to pursue, and we had great advisors and great helpers along the way. It was when you decide to do something like this, you are conscientious about what do you think the future of this product group, this roadmap for the future is in the next 15 or 20 years, and you build it a certain way because you have respect for who's gone before, who's failed before, who's succeeded before. And I do hope that CMS will begin solving this. They didn't mean to do it, I don't believe, but they have built a massive wall that says no innovation shall come into this industry unless it has already been created 20 years ago. But hopefully CMS will address it. There's so many interesting young companies that we're talking with and starting to partner with and just supporting because they're cool. And I would hate to see them do what a lot of them have already done, which is go, it's impossible. We'll go over here and work in forklifts. We'll go over here and work in golf carts. No, I want these bright, brilliant young companies to go, no, this is where I want to work. I want to serve these clients. I want to help this industry.
They sound like lifers to me. I've always thought that if you don't fall in love with the industry, then you leave, because it is a tough industry if you don't have more invested in it. Yeah. If you're here after 5 years, it probably means you've fallen in love with the people and believe that they deserve the best. And it looks like you'll be here forever. Congratulations. We have t-shirts and jackets in the back for you. So thank you very much to Barry Dean and Jared Dean. They're dad and uncle and innovators and always willing to share new ideas and their time. So thanks for being with me today.
Thank you so much for having us.
Honored to be here. Thank you very much.
Mobility Management Podcasts are available for listening and downloading on iTunes, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher. You can also listen to us online at our website, mobilitymgmt.com. And the best way to not miss any of our episodes is to subscribe. Thank you very much for being with us, and we'll be back again soon.